It's Berlin briefing time. Germany's neighbour Poland raised the alarms this week, warning of the risk of an open conflict between Europe and Russia. For now, reckless incursion, provocation, that's the wording NATO allies have agreed on to describe Russia's test on NATO, sending almost 20 drones partially deep into Polish territory. NATO pilots from Poland, Italy and the Netherlands shot down at least three of them. Now the big question is how NATO, Germany, Poland will react. And with me here to explore what kind of turning point we are seeing unfold is our NATO correspondent in Brussels, Terry Schultz. And in the studio, Roman Goncharenko, our Eastern Europe correspondent based in Berlin, and my dear colleague Nina Hase, who we dragged in on her birthday, who covers the German Defense Ministry for us here, amongst many other things. And I want to start with you, though, Terry, and play to you what Ursula von der Leyen, the EU Commission President, said in response. And coincidentally, she held her State of the Nation address, having to respond to this incursion by Russia.
And just today, we have seen a reckless and unprecedented violation of Poland and Europe's airspace by more than 10 Russian Shahed drones. Europe stands in full solidarity with Poland. Putin's message is clear, and our response must be clear too. We need more pressure on Russia to come to the negotiation table. We need more sanctions. We are now working on the 19th package in coordination with partners. We're particularly looking at phasing out Russian fossil fuels faster. We're looking at the shadow fleet and at third countries.
So huge applause, in part standing ovations, grand sweeping message. But what more than rhetoric is coming out of the EU and out of NATO in response to this?
That's a big question, Michaela. Good morning, everyone. Happy to be here on Berlin Briefing. So just to follow on briefly on what Ursula von der Leyen said, she went on to support the call of many frontline states that I believe was initiated in the Baltics for a drone wall. They've been asking for this for years, particularly since the start of Russia's full-scale war on Ukraine. They would like to not have to see fighter jets, you know, rushed into the air to shut down drones. They would like to see what they consider a practically impenetrable wall of drones set up along the front line so that you would shoot down any incoming Russian or Belarusian drones that way. That would be a lot cheaper than fighter jets or Patriot missile batteries or something like that. So then you head over to NATO, and there was already a meeting of the North Atlantic Council, which is all the 32 ambassadors. That was already scheduled for the morning, and we waited to see whether Poland would decide to escalate that meeting into what's called Article 4 consultations, which means that it is asking formally for the allies to take stock of what has happened, to recognize that Poland feels a threat to its territory, to its political independence, to its security, and look at what more they can provide the ally. Now, of course, we normally talk about Article 5, which means you're calling all your allies into actually perhaps fighting a war on your behalf. But Article 4 is still very serious and has only happened a handful of times in the history of the alliance.
Well, Article 5 only came into action once. That was in response to the 9/11 attacks. This Article 4 was last drawn upon in response to that full-scale invasion by Russia into Ukraine. Roman, we're seeing the Polish government speak of a potential direct confrontation now with Russia. This is really scary stuff, particularly for Europeans here. How is this seen in the Russian media at this point in time? What's been the Russian response to this? What's your take on that?
Well, we have to differentiate between the Russian state media. They are trying to downplay it. So they're just rebroadcasting what the Russian defense minister is saying. So they are basically saying it was unintended. We didn't want to hit any Polish targets, and let's talk, let's have consultations, which is pretty cynical. On the other hand, of course, we have the social media where we are seeing a lot of joy by the Russian, the so-called war correspondents or just ordinary users. As they say, now the war is coming to Europe, finally, let's kick them. So there are a lot of military rhetoric there. But in general, I would say that Russian reaction is rather restricted so far. We haven't seen anything or haven't heard anything from Vladimir Putin or President Putin or the Foreign Minister Lavrov. So they are waiting for Europe, for NATO to react.
And we have to say that we're recording on Thursday morning. So, of course, this is an evolving situation, right? So
yeah, anything. But on the first day, there was nothing. So there was only a statement from the Defense Ministry.
And of course, this is a pattern that we've seen previously as well, that Russia will downplay what's happening. This comes as fits into a bigger picture. And we heard that also from the German defense minister, into a bigger picture of continuous provocations. I just want to take a quick look at what the response by Donald Trump has been, because all eyes were, of course, on the United States in response to this. And although there was a very firm statement, and this is all happening on social media, by the U.S. ambassador to NATO, who basically was saying that the United States is fully alongside its allies in NATO. We stand by our NATO allies in the face of these airspace violations and will defend every inch of NATO territory. That's what the U.S. ambassador to NATO has been saying. So taking a look, though, at what Donald Trump, the leader of the Western world, had to say on Truth Social, that sounded a bit less committed. What's with Russia violating Poland's airspace with drones? Question marks. Here we go! Exclamation mark. And I was speaking to a senior Republican advisor here in Berlin just a couple of hours ago, really, and he was also struggling to interpret this, but being adamant that when it comes down to it, the United States will indeed stand up for Article 5. Nina, you were at several press conferences here in Berlin yesterday. Let's start with your question that you had to the German defense minister, Boris Pistorius, because we already got a bit technical here. We've been talking about the difference between Article 4 and Article 5. Nobody wants to call this an attack by Russia. And you asked him, why not Article 5? Let's just take a listen what he said.
It was an attack in a kind of hurting the airspace of Poland. But it was not an attack in a military sense that anything was destroyed or anything was killed, as far as I'm informed. So this is not really a delivered attack, but it is a delivered injury of international law and the sovereignty of Poland. So this is about that, and therefore we have to discuss that in Brussels.
So not an attack on Poland, but an attack on Polish sovereignty. And what was your observation? Is this all semantics, or what is he really referring to there?
I think the problem is that those consequences, what follows from Article 4 or Article 5, have not really ever had to be spelled out specifically, right? So NATO always understood itself, and I'm sure that Terry will agree, that they always said, okay, we will stand with each other if something bad happens, and if a country says it's under threat, then this is Article 4, and we all come together and discuss, and we hear their evidence why they feel under threat. So this is what Poland has invoked, and Boris Pistorius sounded pretty hawkish almost yesterday, compared to some of the other voices. So he called this a deliberate attack, but he was careful.
On the sovereignty, not on the country.
Sovereignty, yeah. Exactly, and not on the territory. We're not at war, all these kind of things. But even using that definition of this being deliberate, this is something that not many people said out loud yesterday. Many people still said, you know, we still have to see, we have to hear Poland's evidence for it, because, of course, Russia is saying this is completely ridiculous what you're accusing us of. We didn't want to go into Poland. We only targeted Western Ukraine. I mean, you know, bad enough, but yes, that's what they said. And we didn't want to target Polish territory. Then Belarus said, oh, actually, there were some drones, yes, but they veered off course. And that is something apparently Poland was warned by Belarus. But Boris Pistorius, again, sounding pretty hawkish yesterday in the parliament, said there is just no evidence that these drones were in fact veering off course. He said they were miles away from Western Ukraine, from targets. So he said he doesn't believe that. And, you know, before even having heard Poland's evidence, that is quite a strong message there.
Roman, how is this going to be received in Ukraine, this messaging that's now... And also, we're detecting at the same time NATO countries stressing that really this is a major incident, but at the same time, keen not to let this escalate into something where they have to physically react, right?
Well, many Ukrainians feel we told you so, because this is exactly what Ukrainians have been warning about, that if you do nothing, if you do not support us, or if you are not ready to shoot down Russian drones over Ukrainian territory, they will come to you. And we've seen it comes earlier than some Western military experts expected. So this is not really something surprising. And Ukrainians warned, actually, of course, Poland that the drones were coming towards Polish border. I didn't sleep that night and was following that on social media live. And there was a lot of comments in Ukraine. This is the day when NATO will either stand up to this challenge or die. So there were a lot of memes, you know, just mocking NATO. But it was rather bitter, I would say, for Ukrainians to watch that happen. But on the other hand, there is hope now that maybe this will be the last wake-up call. People hate that word, wake-up call, but this is actually it.
And NATO's true test, right?
Yes, absolutely. And of course, Ukraine now offered again to shoot down Russian drones over Ukraine. This is what the foreign minister Sibiha said. And this is basically how I see it. There is one question that NATO faces now. It is either going to shoot down more Russian drones over its own territory. Now it's Poland. Tomorrow it could be the Baltic states. There were Russian drones in Romania already before. Or shoot them down over Ukraine, which is more secure for people living on the NATO territory, because if they shoot those drones down over Poland, one day will come when people will be hurt. No one was hurt this time, but no one can guarantee that this will not happen.
Now, geographically, I just want to stress that Belarus neighbors Ukraine. There was also no geographical reason to have any kind of incursion into Poland. Geographically, it probably really makes sense to shoot down drones over Ukrainian territory. But of course, there are major reasons, Terry, why NATO countries don't want to go there, right? Or is that thinking changing?
So I do just want to point out how much NATO thinking has changed, because there is not and cannot be a NATO-wide policy on what to do about these drones, because airspace is national airspace. Those decisions are made by those governments alone. In this case, Poland would have made the decision. But what happened yesterday was actually a really big step for NATO, because Dutch fighter jets shot down those drones as well, not just Polish. And this is what came out of the Dutch Foreign Ministry Dutch Defense Ministry, and I double-checked it with NATO. But truly, there were German patriots that were on alert and Italian resources as well there. They're all part of the NATO air policing unit. There may well be other countries that rotate in and out of that force. But this was a really big step for NATO, that it wasn't just a national government responding to an incursion of national airspace. So they feel like they actually have taken a step forward in defending NATO airspace. But truly, nobody wants to see NATO unity pushed further at the moment when you're not looking at loss of life, despite the fact that the Baltic states and Poland have called for a stronger NATO response. So what I heard after the Article 4 meeting yesterday morning was that Poland asked for more resources along the border, and that allies did come up with some other things that they could provide. They won't share that with us yet. They always say we don't want Russia to know what we're planning. They also don't want to tell us what they're planning. But Poland seems to have gotten some satisfaction that there are more technical resources that will be provided, and the Baltic states think we'll expect to get the same. But we can't overstate that nobody wants to see what the United States would really do if pushed. I mean, this is far from an Article 5 situation. But from Donald Trump's tweet, why are they violating Polish airspace? Here we go. Nobody has any idea what he means. And I don't think anybody wants to find out that it isn't what NATO would like it to be.
Hi, I'm Kate Laycock, host of DW's weekly European current affairs programme, Inside Europe. Our correspondents were there when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Balkans wars broke out, and when Britain voted to leave the European Union. Now the continent is changing again, and we're rising to the challenge, bringing you a combination of expert analysis and on-the-ground reporting. Join us every Thursday.
Well, let's talk about the German commitment here, Nina, because Germany already has two Patriot systems stationed on the eastern border of Poland. Those weren't used. And that also is the question of the economics of a confrontation as well, because one of these Patriot missiles costs several million euros. One of these drones costs tens of thousands of euros, potentially. So it's also a question of how you use your resources, with Ukraine, of course, constantly asking for more desperately needed Patriot systems to defend Ukraine. What's the sense that you got, you headed to the Chancellery yesterday, in terms of what Germany, what other countries may be willing to commit additionally now?
Well, several things on that define use, right? The Patriots are there not necessarily to shoot down missiles yet, but they are still vital in helping create the situation report. So they do have good radar systems. They can alert the others. You know, they definitely did play a role in that because they monitor. They do the air policing in a way. They support the systems. They are in contact with the fighter jets that then drowned the drones. But when it comes to just how efficient is that, it's not efficient at all. If you're confronted with this wall of drones, you know, like Ursula von der Leyen also said, we've discussed that here. These are Shahed drones that are built with off-the-shelf material equipment, you know, and Russia sends hundreds and hundreds. And
off the Chinese shelf, actually, a lot of parts, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Shahed drones are of a similar build. And of course, you can use the Gepard tanks. But, you know, the consequence from this now, from this scenario, that we've got this heavy machinery that, yes, is protecting the Polish hub for Ukrainian equipment that Ukraine's allies are getting. So all of that is located in eastern Poland in Rzeszów. The Patriot units are stationed there. But then you're faced with all these drones, and those heavy systems that are really expensive are not the most efficient way to counteract that, which is why now the big question is going to be also for Germany to answer. How can you help move Ukraine's allies and Poland's allies into a position where they go from air policing to true air defense in an efficient way, you know, so that these situations don't even occur? And of course, the Ukrainians have got a lot of expertise now, and Volodymyr Zelensky has offered, not just in helping actively to bring down drones, but also, you know, let us integrate our systems properly. And they build nonstop. I mean, Roman, you know that, right? The Ukrainians are so creative when it comes to developing and reacting to new technical possibilities that the Russians are using. So all of that thinking is now beginning to sink into the German government's thinking as well, that this current system of air policing in this situation, when we're faced with all these huge numbers of drones, is just not efficient, it's not effective, and these situations can easily escalate, because Boris Pistorius said in public that these drones were carrying ammunition. You know, they were equipped. Something could have gone badly, badly wrong. And we cannot risk a situation where NATO territory suddenly sees an accident, and then that would trigger, you know, something inconceivable for us now. But there is awareness that this is not efficient yet.
There is a certain irony that exactly on that day when Russia sent those drones to Poland, the German manufacturer of weapons, Rheinmetall, signed a contract with Ukraine for supplying Ukraine with modern state-of-the-art air defense systems, Skyranger. And Ukraine will get them before the German Bundeswehr gets them. But they are desperately needed now in Germany and in Poland, of course.
Yeah.
They are modern systems designed to fight drones. So they can shoot down drones with modern ammunition, but there's a cloud of metal. They are also good against swarms of drones. So this is exactly what NATO needs now on its eastern flank. And it's not there because, well, the manufacturers were maybe too slow, or the governments were too slow to order. And this will have to change. The German government, as far as I understand, is now planning to order hundreds of such systems, but it will take time.
Mm-hmm. And also, can I just add one more thing? Because one of the systems that has proven to be most effective in bringing down Shahed drones is the Gepard. And the Gepard tank is no longer in use by the Bundeswehr. So the Bundeswehr decided to give the Gepard tanks that it didn't want to use because people perceived it as being dated, you know, not up to standard, modern standards, etc. So they gave all of that to Ukraine, and Ukraine is saying, it's brilliant. We use it all the time, you know, or they operate with machine guns, you know, especially at night when the drones fly and you can hear them, then it's easier to target them. So all of this kind of thinking, and of course, it could trigger ugly debate here in Germany as well. How much are we going to give to Ukraine? But also now, how much are we going to give to Poland and to all the other countries that now say, look, this is real. This is very, very real. And the AfD, the far-right AfD party in Parliament yesterday, gave us a hint of that when they asked, OK, so what does the German government do to protect its own people now if we're giving away all of our systems, of which we don't have enough, as everybody
Which is an interesting point, because the AfD continues to actually take the stance that Russia isn't such a great threat as NATO makes it out to be. But I just want to explore a bit more what this is doing to the political resolve. More than 3 years of war in Ukraine, these NATO countries, all countries in Europe, have spent a lot of time looking at what their own capabilities are. Now, in Poland, this has created a moment of unity between the Prime Minister Donald Tusk and the president, who actually gets on really well with the US president. You had the chance to ask Chancellor Merz whether he shares that Polish assessment that this is a turning point. Let's just take a listen to that.
I share the assessment that this is a very serious threat to peace across all of Europe. This is a new kind of attack that we are seeing from Russia. I also share his assessment that the Russian government's claim that this was supposedly an accident or a mistake is not credible.
So, Terry, I want to take this to you. No accident. Nobody's willing to gloss over this latest huge provocation. Manfred Weber, the leader of the largest conservative EPP bloc in the EU Parliament, is talking of a moment where there needs to be action on creating a joint air defence within the European Union as well. None of these ideas are new. What new movement do you believe will be on any of this now?
Well, let's just talk about one new movement, and that's that the German government is not shying away from saying that Poland's action was correct. You didn't hear any of this talk about, uh-oh, that's going to be an escalation. Let's just think about what a big difference that is from, you know, years past with the German government calling anything, fearing that anything would be an escalation with Russia. Everybody leapt to Poland's defense and saying this was the right thing to do. So you're not going to get a lot of support for a European Union air defense shield, because of course the countries on the front line want to put those resources into NATO, wants to get that backup from NATO. And Germany, coincidentally, is the co-chair of the Air Defense Capability Coalition inside NATO, inside the Ukraine Defense Contact Group. So Germany is really also supposed to be part of the planning of NATO's own territorial air defense. And this has been something that those countries have been talking about for many years, not just what can we do to help Ukraine, but why are we not better protected ourselves? This is going to bring all of these long-standing and very unresolved arguments and complaints to the fore. And just to the point about also President Zelensky hopping in on this and saying, look at what's happening to you. This is perhaps not so bad for Ukraine, that Europe now feels that it has been dragged in to some extent, that its own territorial defense has now been called into question. And I just think that the next few days are going to be really important, because if Russia was using this as a test of how NATO would respond, and perhaps is surprised that it got its drones shot down, the Zapad exercise is beginning later this week, end of this week, tomorrow. And I think that, you know, they may well try other things and say, oh, that was accidental, because we're, you know, we have our largest annual, semi-annual exercise with Belarus right now. I don't think, they may well try more things in the next days. And NATO must be thinking really hard about what it's going to do if this happens again today, tomorrow, over the next couple of weeks. But we do know that they need to step up their air defenses. That's been such an Achilles heel for the alliance. And now it's laid out in the open.
Roman, how big of a test will this maneuver be that we're expecting to see over the next couple of days?
Well, we don't know exactly. The numbers are not very big, 13,000, some say, maybe more. Russia may increase the number of troops that are there. I wanted to make a point and suggest that we look at it in a broader perspective. What happened in the days before? There were talks between the United States and Russia to end this war. They failed. This is obvious. And then there were a number of signals from Russia that Russia wants to continue this war and is ready to cross lines. Just a few days before this story in Poland, Russia hit for the first time the Ukrainian Cabinet of Ministers building inside Kyiv with a missile. It was a very clear signal, a message to Ukraine and also to the West.
After having targeted already the EU,
exactly.
And the British Council.
We forget because a lot of things are happening at the same time. But just a few days ago, for the first time in 3.5 years, Russia hit a government building, which was kind of a taboo unofficially since this big war started. So it was a message to Ukraine, but also to the West. We are ready to cross lines. We're not just continuing as before. We are speeding up. And now the West is to respond.
So after all of this that you just mentioned happened after Donald Trump met in person with Vladimir Putin in Alaska, which was supposed to be the beginning of the end of this war. This was supposed to be heading into some kind of at least a truce process, if not a peace process. Ever since that, there have been, as you just mentioned, bigger attacks, more intrusive attacks right into the heart of Ukraine. And now NATO is being tested. Terry, I want to take this to you because there is a list of things. There's a lot of scenarios in those NATO draws already on what action both NATO or the EU could take. Just to name a few, is there now more talk about actually getting involved in taking care of Ukraine's airspace as well? I know this is something that Ukraine desperately would want and wanted from day one, or one could argue softer touch approaches of limiting Schengen visas, for instance, for Russian officials. Any concrete steps on the horizon?
So on your last point about there was just this, we didn't mention it, but this spy scandal uncovered just in the last few days by the Czechs, by Belarusian and Moldovan semi-diplomats that were allowed to walk freely through the Schengen zone. And the Czech government is going to renew its push to withdraw all visas for these people so that they cannot move between Schengen countries and perhaps, you know, past secrets and this kind of thing. You know, it's very sensitive for NATO. It still does not want to be seen as taking part in this war as NATO. That is considered by everyone to be something that would be counterproductive. So I think that they will continue the air policing mission. There's long been calls, as we've been talking about today, to make that a more offensive mission. And I think that they will say that they've done that now with shooting down drones for the very first time. There is pressure to make the air policing mission more aggressive so that it actually would challenge in a bigger way any incoming object of any kind. There is also pressure on the European side about the dangers for civilian air traffic. And we haven't even talked about that. Remember that Poland had to shut down its airspace, its civilian airspace, its airports briefly during this drone incursion. So I think that there are questions coming from all sides. And as you say, they've got plans to protect NATO territory, and they will always fall back on that. There are definitely plans to scale that up. Countries are being asked to make their contributions to the maximum of their abilities with the increase in defense spending. But you're not going to see NATO as NATO get more involved in the war on Ukraine. It cannot do that. It's a red line for the alliance. But with the coalition of the willing, discussing potentially putting troops on the ground post-conflict, all of these discussions are bound together. But I think what happened with the drone incursion, where Russia was probably clearly trying to test what the alliance will do, I think the next days are really crucial to see what Moscow does and therefore how NATO responds, more than the European Union.
And of course, the European Union is already working on its 19th package of sanctions. We're still awaiting a decision out of the US Congress whether indeed it will go ahead with its own sanctions package. Meanwhile, the European Union is still taking gas deliveries from Russia. In fact, hundreds of millions of euros heading that way, helping to finance, of course, also the war. Nina, with that remarkable, I wouldn't say shift of position, but that very outspoken way you heard the Chancellor respond to your question there. What is this doing to the debate here in Germany, particularly also within the coalition? How much more resolve do you see building there?
Like Terry said, the German government does come across like very much more resolved than the previous one under Chancellor Olaf Scholz from the Social Democrats, who always warned of escalation. Friedrich Merz is very clear in his foreign policy messaging, in the symbolism. He also famously, when he was not Chancellor yet, said, if Russia crosses any more lines, then we will have to consider sending the Taurus cruise missiles.
Then, of course, as soon as he was in government, stopping to want to define any kind
but
of...
But now, it, right? Manfred, yeah. Weber, people, yeah, from his own camp, are openly calling for the Taurus cruise missiles to be sent to Ukraine so that it can be used. So this is definitely going to be a big debate again. And we will see just how strong the current leaders of the Social Democrats are, because they are people like Boris Pistorius, who, like I said, sounds very hawkish pretty much straight away, coming up with this assessment before other people dare do so. This was deliberate,
exactly.
And we can't believe the Russian statements that, oops, you know, if anything, they are tolerating something that we cannot accept. So Boris Pistorius is also a Social Democrat. And Lars Klingbeil sounds very much like Boris Pistorius. But then you do have people who
Lars Klingbeil,
still...
the Vice Chancellor and leader of...
Exactly, and party leader,
yeah,
right? So very strong man within that camp. So I would say that the Social Democrats have changed somewhat when it comes to who has the say. The people who are more careful, cautious, who want to engage with Russia in a dialogue, who still say that diplomacy first, and let's be very, very, very careful in what kind of missiles we can give to Ukraine, because we don't want to escalate anything, etc. They are quieter at the moment, but they are still there. And Friedrich Merz is in a coalition with them. But I would also like to make the point that, of course, everybody still knows that NATO is only as strong as the US is willing to make it at the moment. And Donald Trump is now busy with Charlie Kirk. So Russia will see that, right? So the right-wing influencer who got shot.
Yeah.
Vladimir Putin will also see that. If Donald Trump doesn't react, this is not a good sign for the European part of NATO, because they can send out all the strong messaging they want. Ultimately, they do rely and they are dependent on so many American systems still. So, yeah. That is hard.
I'm going to get to you in a moment, Roman, on this, but I just want to take this back to Terry, because can you just flesh out for us the difference between Donald Trump's statements and what the actual working level at NATO is doing from the American side at the moment. I mean, there was a huge difference in statements, but also in terms of the resolve they project within NATO.
You know, things have really calmed down after the Hague summit. There was so much panic before that. And then when you saw Donald Trump come out and say, oh, I finally understand how NATO works and they're not mooching off us. And, you know, all these leaders just love their countries. The tension at NATO really relaxed, I have to say. I mean, as many of us are not comfortable with the amount of gratuitousness that was seemingly required to get there, it has really helped people be able to sort of go back to work and try to build what happens next, including now it will be about what to do for Poland. And the U.S. ambassador to NATO, whose statement on Poland you put up there, is very solid. And, you know, President Nawrocki came back from a meeting with President Trump, as I think Nina mentioned, having been told, if you want more troops, we'll give them to you. You know, that's sort of inconceivable in the midst of the U.S. Defense Force Posture Review that's going to be coming out later this year, where they are expected to pull back troops and therefore take away a lot of the security that the front line is feeling. But I think there's much more of a working atmosphere now since the Hague summit and since those statements, despite all of the uncertainty about what's going to happen with Trump and Putin. Sort of on NATO's day-to-day business, people are much more comfortable with the situation after Trump's latest statements on the Hague. Of course, nobody lives in the absence of fear about what's going to happen in Ukraine. But I don't even know what to say about that. We just can't see what's going to happen in terms of the peace. But, you know, this Coalition of the Willing meeting, I mean, I could bring in all kinds of threads. The Coalition of the meeting in Paris last week, which I attended for DW, thankfully, was very reassuring. You really did have 26 countries say, this is what we're going to contribute. Not all boots on the ground, but we are willing to make these contributions in a post-conflict Ukraine eventually. And that was very reassuring to each of those allies that are talking about doing that. This was a strong moment. I'm usually very skeptical of these meetings and the statements that they come out afterwards, but this actually was a tangible step forward for Ukraine and for the NATO allies that are participating. Did that answer your question, Michaela? I'm not sure.
Well, we're trying.
There's many things to talk about.
This is clearly an evolving development, but it was tangible in German parliament as well, as Nina and I were kind of speaking to many people involved in defense issues as well, that there is a growing joint resolve. And also it was quite clear that since Trump met Putin, the whole criticism of diplomacy not playing out hasn't completely vanished, but there is a real credibility check on how valid that argument is, that diplomacy hasn't been tried. I just want to conclude in what is an issue, and please drop your comments what you would like to get more details on over the coming weeks and months just below here. I just want to do a closing round of what each of your predictions are of what the key question is over the next days and months. Roman, I'll let you go first on that because I know you clearly have a few.
Well, when we are talking about this, I'm constantly seeing pictures of Russian state television propaganda shows there discussing exactly this, what has happened. So there were calls, let's bomb Rzeszów, which is the most important military hub. Mm-hmm. They've done it 100 times.
Yeah,
German Patriot systems and not just them. Americans were there before. The Dutch are taking over in a short while. So this is not new. The Russian public, the Russian people know that this could happen. So the Russian state propaganda has prepared them for this. Now this is happening. And this is not a surprise for the West, but the West didn't do enough, if you ask me. So they were not ready for such a scenario. They were hoping that this will not happen. Now they have to decide what they do. Do they show strength and do something that they haven't done before? For example, shooting down those drones over Ukraine, over Western Ukraine, not just Ukraine, which would be a very strong signal. But I think there is still a lot of reserve towards that scenario in NATO and in Germany as well. But this will have to happen. Otherwise, NATO will have to shoot down more drones over its own territory. And who can guarantee that next time there will not be missiles? And this is where German Patriots will have to be used.
And this clearly is the Ukrainian stance that we're getting from you, the counterposition that is stressed time and time again, not just in the German government, is, of course, that anything that might be interpreted as an involvement of NATO countries, even if it's not NATO as a whole, in this conflict is seen as a threshold for escalation. Terry, do you see a change in that assessment taking place in real time right now?
I absolutely do. And again, I go back to the fact that Dutch jets, not just Polish jets, shot down these drones. That's a really big deal. And yes, Russia may spin it as NATO getting involved in the conflict, but the drones were in Polish airspace, so they really can't say anything about this. Looking forward, I think, as Roman says, I think NATO has to be ready to shoot down basically now anything that comes into NATO airspace, now that they've done it in Poland. If something comes into Latvia, I think they will expect this air policing mission to shoot it down, and I think they should be able to expect that. That's what they've been asking for. So I think we should worry about perhaps some movement toward NATO countries saying, look, now that the threat is in our own airspace, possibly in our own territory, we may need to keep some of our resources here instead of giving it to Ukraine. That could be a downside of what has happened. A positive thing that might happen is the fact that they will finally get their act together on weapons production, on producing drones, on scaling up the drone defenses along the border, as the Baltic states and Poland have been asking for. Just really, we keep waiting for when is the moment that the European defense production is really going to get a kick in the butt. And I think that maybe this will be it. Maybe now that they do feel a threat to their own territory, maybe this will be what it takes. And Ursula von der Leyen did announce yesterday in the State of the Union speech as well that the EU is signing a contract with Ukrainian drone manufacturers. So there is one going to perhaps be one more source of actual physical defense capabilities that are coming. And maybe this is what it took to do that.
And Nina, I want to close with you because Boris Pistorius also yesterday said, when he was speaking in Parliament, that de facto Germany is now Ukraine's largest supporter. So how is that shifting responsibility?
It is fascinating to see that the current government in Germany is really very, very clear in its messaging. I've said it before. When it comes to foreign policy issues, we were going to do an episode today on Berlin Briefing about a completely different topic, though, Michaela.
Absolutely. I wasn't going to mention it. I got over it. Social reform, that's not happening.
Social welfare and the state of the German economy and what this current government is planning. And they are very much in disagreement, shall we say, the Social Democrats and the Conservatives, about what to do. And we saw just this week that in France there is a crisis because of this very issue. How much money does a European country have for social welfare programs? And this is a very big test for the current German government coalition, which is why, as much as they agree on foreign policy, on standing by Ukraine's side, on standing by Poland's side, we may see an interior debate here in Berlin that has very little to do with those big challenges. The debate about, you know, the Conservatives saying we can't afford this social welfare state anymore, and the Social Democrats saying, but we do need to have people participate and give them chances. And, you know, we are going to have to do this episode, even though there are all these foreign policy crises, because, as we all know, governments can fall. They can collapse over issues like that. So this is going to be a very, very real test here in Berlin. At the same time, because it's my birthday, I want to end on an optimistic note.
Happy birthday, Nina. Yes.
Thank you. Germans did take a very long time to wake up. But when you speak to people, especially here in Berlin, especially off the record, you do notice just how quickly things are moving behind the scenes and how businesses have woken up and how people, you know, consultants, etc., who had nothing to do with defense half a year ago are now suddenly specialists because the money is there. It's an opportunity, and Germans do things diligently. So, you know, this is something that could also happen more quickly than we expect. I don't know that. And of course, there is a big pot of money because the current government is making a lot of debt to invest in these kind of programs.
So depending on how these developments unfold, that episode about the social systems reform that is not quite happening in Germany and Germany's ability to reform is coming up very soon. But we learn once again, and thank you for that, Nina, that domestic politics in the end make or break the stability of Europe's largest economy, but also other European nations. And on that note, I just want to thank you all, Terry in Brussels. Thank you very much. Nina, thanks again. Go off and celebrate your birthday.
9/11 is a great day to have a birthday.
Yes. Well, and Roman, thank you so much for joining us at very short notice here. You are now briefed on the state of events following that major provocation by Russia sending drones into Poland, Germany's neighbor, shifting developments here, and a moment of reckoning for the European Union and NATO as a whole. Do check for more updates and in-depth analysis in our Berlin Briefing newsletter, and do drop us your comments on what you would like to get briefed up on.